studio in Los Angeles, California on January the 1st, 2020. Thank you for coming to my website. And I have some interesting things to share with you on this New Year's Day. I just finished watching the Pasadena Rose Parade, which is a Southern California classic, and it was as beautiful as ever. I really had goosebumps when I saw that the theme was Latina and hope, and that's pretty good because the region of America that I live in today, we're going to help people get out of this terrible plight that we're in. But I'd like to read a paragraph for you this morning, and I think that those of you with interesting minds will know that in 2020, I do have very clear vision. My co-host hipped me to a statement by one whose name is Alexander Fraser Tyler. He was also known as Lord Wodehousely. He was a Scottish advocate, a judge, a writer, and a historian. He was born on October the 15th, 1747. That's a long time ago. And he died January 5th, 1813. His parents were William Tyler, and his children was Patrick Fraser Tyler. I want to read what he wrote so many years ago, and I want you to tell me what you think about it. Now, you can find this because my co-host, Bob Klink, showed it to me when I was having a meal with him, and it blew my mind, and I'd like to read it to you. And I hope that you will share this with many people, because you see, we're living during a time when democracy seems to be failing. Well, it was supposed to fail. Everything in our culture was supposed to come to an end. And I'm not starting off this new year with gloom and doom. I'm just giving you some facts. Some people wrote about the society that they lived in years and years ago, over 100 years ago. And so we ought not be surprised when we see our culture failing. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largely from the public treasury, meaning that the voters control the money that's in the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loss of fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. Then this writer goes on and he says, the average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been 200 years. These nations have progressed through this sequence. Now listen to the sequence that this writer that lived hundreds of years ago wrote about. From bondage to spiritual faith, from spiritual faith to great courage, from courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness, that's where we are today, from selfishness to apathy, from apathy, dependence, from dependence, back into bondage. Alexander Fraser Tyler, writing about democracy. Now, what do we see in this short paragraph? I think we see something, and I think we need to pay attention to it, especially as we come into this new era of 2020. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can only exist until the voters discover that they can vote themselves from the public, you know, more money from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury. That's why our government is the way it is, and that's the way we operate here in this country. Okay, as a result, that a democracy always collapses over the loss of fiscal policy. In other words, when that money is gone, that democracy ends. Okay, and it's always followed by a dictatorship. That's why when you look at European countries, countries in Africa and other places in South America, the revolutions, what's going on in China today, all right? Hong Kong, as a matter of fact. So the average age of the world's greatest civilizations has been, this writer says, 200 years. How old is America? You see what I'm talking about? These nations, including America, have progressed through this sequence. Bondage to spiritual faith. Look at us. Look at us. Where's the spiritual faith of America today? Where did it come from? What was it based or built upon? From spiritual faith to great courage. In other words, that's when we raise that flag and march behind that flag and have courageous speakers to speak about what we're doing. From courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance. That's America's growth rate. We've come to be the most powerful country in the world. From abundance to selfishness, because now we want to hoard it to ourselves and not share that wealth with everyone else. We build these walls. From courage to liberty, from liberty to abundance, from abundance to selfishness. That's what we've become. And from this selfishness, we become apathetic about everything. From apathy to dependence, from dependence back into bondage, and then we have to start all over again. America has had the audacity to bounce back. And you know what? I'm glad my friend Bob showed me this great piece, because what it does for me, it plainly lets me know that the world that I'm living in is a real one. And I want to thank Alexander Fraser Tyler for writing these words down. Well, let me say this. I don't have much faith in democracy as we come into 2020. I don't have much faith in our politicians, in the way things are run in this once great country of ours. And what I mean by great, I meant that it was great enough for us to admit our particular faults and get beyond them. Do I see something on the horizon that's going to make America appear to be the kind of country that she can be? I don't put trust in that. I just don't see it on the horizon. I think the celebrations, the Happy New Year, the good wishes, I would hope that we as a national people of different heritage backgrounds, faiths, and all of that might come together and really embrace the human spirit with each other. And as much as I'd like to say this, we need to give God his place back at the forefront of our national institutions. That's the vision that I have. I don't know how we're going to do it, but what I plan to do, and I'm going to do a little bit of it today, is I'm going to try to bring back a sense of God-worthiness through my webcast that I present to you. I have been privileged to keep all of my notes that I've had over the years, and I'm going to share some of these notes with you. I'm going to thank Kenneth for listening and communicating back to me that he really appreciates what I'm doing in the book of Proverbs. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to bring it to light. You know what? Pastor Zarek's Reamer called me, I think it was New Year's Eve, and he said to me that, you know, he was talking about the future of the idea of God and bringing that idea into the minds of our children, into our communities, into our neighborhoods. And I was telling him what I was fashioning my webcast to be. 2020 vision is what I'm calling this. And I think that's exactly what we need to do. And I want to start at today, and I'm just skipping all over the book of Proverbs, but I'd like to just share something with you, and let me grab my Bible. If you could do that right now, and let's get into this New Year's Day webcast. And this is the way that I'm going to present myself to you in the future from now on, because I'm still, whether I like it or not, I am yet a pastor. I can't get away from that. I just want to present what Proverbs is saying. And I hope that I'm not repeating this study to you. Let me make sure, because I don't want it to, good, I'm not. Let's get started. What I'd like to do is I'd like to say that as we continue in this particular book, as I talk you through it, we look to see the continuation of the praise of the young by the faithful teacher. In other words, the faithful teacher is looking to the young man in front of him, the future. And you know, when we look to our nation and we look to ourselves, we can only see America as we glance into the future of her status. This is what I want to share with you, the future of this status. Now, what do we see in these verses? Let me start off, and I'm going to look at this. I want to look at Proverbs chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. Let me read it to you. It says, "Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding. For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction." Now, this is very, very important, because as we look at this, it is a continuous call to be diligent. You know, I try to tell young men when I speak to them, don't give up your search for decent employment. Don't give up your search for human equality. First, you have to respect yourselves, and then you may be respected by others. I went to a place called, and I'll never go back to this place again. I was invited by a friend of mine to go to the Magic Castle. The Magic Castle is a restaurant establishment. It was actually a castle that a family of musicians, magicians, they were tricksters, people that did card tricks. Well, this Magic Castle, you go there, you pay, and it's a private club. A friend of mine asked me to go. I'll never go back again. Because I didn't like the spirit of what I felt there. Number one, I was the only, no, I was the only black male person in the Magic Castle, and it was packed. It was packed, and but I didn't feel welcome by most of the guests. It was packed. There wasn't a table in that restaurant that was not being filled, and it's ran beautifully. It's a private establishment. Keep it private. I don't want to become a member of that club because I saw the way a lot of the club members looked at me for being there. I know when I'm not welcome. Some of the people complimented this nice blazer that I had on, but I wasn't welcome. I wasn't welcome by most of the white privileged individuals in that place. I will never go there again. Oh, the food was delicious and the wine was of top quality, and I'm sure that the people that go there enjoy themselves. I'm not a card player. I don't believe in magic tricks and things like that. So I was undoubtedly very unhappy at the Magic Castle. I don't rate it very high, not as an African American. And especially because even though I'm conservative, I am not a diehard conservative. I have a liberal heart because while I was there in the Magic Castle looking at all this gluttonous behavior that we were all participating in, I was thinking about the extremely homeless population that garners my community. And so I didn't feel well eating that nice salmon dish and drinking that nice glass of wine to go with that fish. And the dessert was, oh, it was just so much. I was sick when I got home when I thought of it. Not because the food made me sick, but because I participated in it. If I had known that the Magic Castle was going to be that way, I would not have gone. I have 20/20 vision now. I'm just telling you what I see and why I see it and why I feel it. In our nation, there are people suffering, and we need to spend money on helping the suffering people in our nation. When I was a pastor of a Christian church, that is what I would say, and I say the same thing. And I say for shame when people go to places like that to indulge in this kind of involvement when other people around us are inhumanely suffering. Now, since I've said that, let me go back. Okay, again, we see the emphasis to here in verse 1, which is a positive aspect of the call. Its positiveness is seen in that the older one advises a lean towards instruction. In other words, older people always should have the disposition to talk to younger people and to, if not demand, if they're your children, to command them to follow a certain kind of instruction. If I had a lot of money and if I were going to leave it to a group of young men, I would say, you're not going to get this reward unless you live under the auspices that I instruct you. Now, this positive lean towards instruction is a means by which something is to be done. All right? You can see that in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God, you note the instruction is given, that you may gain understanding. What is the implication? The implication is that life alone, with all of the lessons, does not necessarily mean that we have the right kind of understanding. And you have to tell young people that, because young people think that because they think or have a vision of something that's going to come true. No, if you're living on this planet, you're going to have to follow the rules of the planetary nature. You would have to tell a young person that things are not going to turn out the way you think they should turn out because you think they need to turn out that way. Personal experience alone is not the conductor from which we know something to be valid. You can't just go by that personal experience. There has to be other experiences blended into this. The author of the text is God. He has something in mind for the reader, in that our instruction is not for us alone, but is for a far greater cause, for generations beyond. I would never have thought in the year 1962, when I was 18 years old, that I would be here in the year 2020 speaking to you. No, I would not. If you had asked me in 1962, I said, oh man, I'll be long dead. I'd have to be 75 years old. Man, what in the heck? I've seen 75-year-old people walking around with wrinkles hanging on down their face, walking over bent backwards, can't think right, can't even pee right. My goodness, 75 years old, look at me. Look at me, and I'm still railing on biblical instruction. Let's look at verse 2. Verse 2 says, for I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction. Oh, what a hallmark to start 2020 with. Isn't that fantastic? You know, we see the negative aspect of these two verses. It is first based upon the premise that the discipler, the older person, is sending forth only that which is sound. Why would I come to this microphone on this computer and say or try to share something with you that is not sound, something that's not going to carry you through 2020, something that's not going to bless your family, bless your life, and help you to go forward in this world? He states that he is to be listened to. The point is here that there are, in most cases, there will not be that human teacher, that someone that has the godly insight, which has been placed in their heart for the assistance of maintaining life goals. You're not going to find that person in the common spray of humanity. You're going to have to seek him out. Because remember, what they've done in this country is they have shut wisdom up. I watched a great movie yesterday with a friend of mine, and it was called Ford versus Ferrari. Now, if you want to see that movie, you can purchase it. It's a very interesting movie because it was showing how the head of the Ford Motor Company back in the 50s wanted to run that famous road race with a Ferrari and his cars. And there was an interesting part of the movie when the staff of Mr. Ford was trying to run the operation in building this fantastic American sports car that can beat the Ferrari in this French road race for 24 hours. The best part of the movie is when, I forget the guy's name, a famous racer driver went to the leader of the Ford thing, to Mr. Ford himself, and told him to get rid of all the naysayers on his staff and listen to him alone because he could win the race. And that was true, because I spoke forth and I said, you know, that's true, because when I was pastor in the church, I was the leader of that church. I didn't listen to any deacons. I didn't listen to any other preachers. I didn't listen to my staff. God called me to pastor that church. God called me to preach the word. He didn't call anyone else there to dissect this Bible and to break it down. And so when that principle ceased, I ceased. I wasn't going to listen to a board of officers that knows nothing. Ah, my friend, let's look at the negative aspect of verse 2. Verse 2 said, for I give you sound teaching, do not abandon. Look at this. Note the caution. What does it speak of? This speaks of a certain discipline that the retainer of Scripture is to have. In other words, you cannot be abandoning that which you know is true. This also speaks of a caution in that someone is watching the growth and the development of the younger. See, I try to tell the young men. I had one of the young men call me. He called me yesterday on New Year's Eve. And I hadn't spoken with him since I attended his wedding. And he called and he said, old man, how are you? I said, well, Richard, I'm fine. And this same young man, I recall a number of years ago, I had to order off of my property. I mean, in very harsh words, because he would not listen to my instruction. And I told him that if he comes around my house, then I'm going to give him the best kind of instruction that can guide his life, and he will never, ever listen to me. Those of you that are not listening to me yet, and I told him that you would never, ever be persuaded not to listen to what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is absolutely true in every sense of the word. Well, he called me yesterday to find out how I was doing. And I said, oh, I'm fine. How are you? And he said that he got a promotion on his job. He and his wife are doing wonderful. He's working harder than he has ever worked before. He has no time to fool around and play games. And I said, welcome, Richard, to the life of the married adult person. You are with your wife, living with her, as I live with Lucy, just beginning. And I remember watching this boy when he was 12, 13 years old, walking down my street from living with his parents. And I went to his wedding this last August, a beautiful sight with he and his lovely bride. And he is living a positive life just the way I and his father taught him. I remember the day of the wedding. I went to the wedding and I met his father, and his father said, John, I've heard about how you've counseled my son. And he said, thank you. He has turned out to be a better man for it. And I said, no, thank you for sharing your son with me. I've always wanted one, love young men, and to see one grow up and do the right thing like that is just the epitome of holding to knowledge. So it speaks of a caution that someone is watching the growth and development as I watch that young man. Discipline is totally necessary in order to have the right kind of discernment. This is also a command of prohibition, which is to be followed by a motive clause. Now, the motive clause is seen in verses 3 through 9. I want to read it through and then I'm going to come back. Let's go there. When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother, then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast my words. Keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom, and with all your acquiring, get an understanding. Prize her, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place Man, look at this. She will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. My goodness, the older carries the learner into past history to levy a point. Do you remember what I just told you that I told Richard about marrying? Well, in these verses 3 through 9 is what he did. And that is why Richard and his lovely wife's life is blessed to this day. Because regardless of how old you are, where you come from, and whatever goes on, wisdom will lead the day. Now, let me prove it to you. Let's go back to verse 3. And let's pay very close attention to this. Oh, I'm loving this. And I'm hoping that you're loving it too. This is the first webcast of the year 2020. As you look at this vision of following God through following his word, but you don't have to do it through uniting with joining a church, with giving your money to somebody. Now, look, if you want to do that, go ahead and do that. I'm not trying to tell you I'm just trying to tell you are better off reading the Bible for yourself and listening to someone that knows what this Bible teaches. See, I'm not for throwing the Bible away. I don't believe that. Some people think that since I've resigned from the pulpit, oh, John is throwing the Bible away. No, John is not. John is allowing the Word, the living Word of God, to come into his heart, soul, and mind, and to abbreviate everything in his life. I'm living an abbreviated life. I'm here in human form on this earth, and I'm also connected to the spiritual. Verse 3 of this marvelous chapter, he says, when I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother. In other words, I have been where you are, therefore listen to me. Isn't this beautiful? I have experienced that which can help you. Now, you need to keep in mind these words now provide a narrative, a framework for the verses leading up to verse 9. All of the rest of these verses, 3 through 9, support the rest of the Father's instructions, because there is a plethora of instruction in this book. That is why the book is here. That is why if you have one of these books in your home, and I don't mind you listening to it on a tape recorder if you want to listen to it like that, your eyes may be, but listen to each verse at a time. If you have Bible on a tape recorder or on a MP3, listen to the verse. I would ask you to listen to one verse, stop it, and tell me what that verse means. That's all I'm doing. You also note the affection that the speaker knew he held in the heart of his father. In other words, the young man knew that his father loved him. Young people know when you are telling them the right things, the pure things, not just because you're related to them by blood, because they have seen it work in their lives. We also thus understand the affection that the younger also holds in the heart of the speaker. This is beautiful. Look at verse 4. Look at verse 4. Verse 4 says, then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold fast to my words, keep my commandments and live. You see, the words that I am providing for your safety were provided for mine. Why not obey them? Since they help me, they'll help you. That's what I was telling Richard, right? Richard, this is the way. See, Richard would come by my house when he was a young man. First started coming down here when he was in his, I guess, early 20s. And I told him, I said, you knew my wife, Lucy. I never hit her. I never cursed at her. I never cursed her out. I never knocked her down. How did that happen? Because I abide by a standard. The words that I'm providing are for your safety because they provided safety for me. Why not obey these words? Because they can provide that same safety for you. Verse 5. Acquire wisdom. Acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Now, verse 5 is interesting because he seems to be badgering the person with the same theme over and over again. Why do you think he's doing that? Do you pick up that the father submitted to his own father's teaching? Right. You see, what he's doing, he says, they've taught me. Let your words hold to what I've held to. Man, look at this. Acquire this wisdom. Acquire the understanding. Don't forget it. He said, that's what I did. And look at the success that I'm having. See, I don't know why anyone could not pick up this book of Proverbs and read that verse and say, oh my God, here's a person that loves his offspring. We don't teach our children anything like that now. Our children are growing up and they're becoming monsters. They don't believe in moral relativity anymore. There is no moral relativity. Everyone can do and believe and say and think what they want. Let's move on down. And to verses 6 and 7. It says, do not forsake her. Her, whenever you see wisdom spoke of as a female, that's a good thing. And, you know, you would think of wisdom being a fine, pristine lady. Wisdom doing what she is supposed to do, being what she should be. Wisdom is what we are all headed towards. Verses 6 and 7. Do not forsake her. She will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. And with all your acquiring, get an understanding. Oh, we note the intimate relationship between the person and the teaching in verse 6. Look at the verse. Do not forsake her. She will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. See, this is intimacy. You have to let wisdom come and grab you like that. God's words go right to our hearts. And you know that he has a tender affection for you. God has a most tender affection for all of us human beings, whether you're rich or whether you're poor. Now, in the Magic Castle, if people want to go there and spend their money and eat steak, prime rib, and all that, and see somebody do a card trick, God bless you. It's your money. Spend it any way you want to do it. No, that's like me going to see the Lion King on Broadway. Why should I do it? I've seen the Lion King on Broadway once. Sure enough, don't want to waste no money seeing it again. And if I really want to see the Lion King, I'd rent the video, right? Wisdom's teachings are as a lover to your soul. His instruction will watch over you. Don't you want that? I mean, if you know, I tell these youngsters that taking this crystal meth, I say, man, look, you may experience the thrill of crystal meth right now, the first 2 minutes after you swoop it or take that long drag on that pipe. But brother, what it does to your brain, to your mind, to your body, to your infrastructure, you need to protect that. And so that by the time you're 75, like this old man in 2020, with clear vision, mind you, you won't make it. One has said of this wisdom, these words, and I quote, loving wisdom is not primarily emotional, but describes the obedience that rises out of love. You see, it's a certain obedient factor that raises itself up out of love. This has to do with an attitude towards instruction as well as correction. See, if your attitude is messed up, you can say you love wisdom and lie it away at the same time. One of the things that I've discovered is looking at church is that they are very good at lying to themselves and then trying to drag in God and make God become a part of that picture. You know what I'm talking about? Well, you know, God loves my mess. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. And he knows that you're a liar. Oh, read verse 7, John. Read verse 7. You guys got the book open with me? You reading with me? Look at verse 7. It says, the beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. And with all your acquiring, get an understanding. Now, this is unique because the instructor acquaints himself with wisdom's reason for purpose. You know what that reason for purpose is? It's to make you wise. Now, the assumption is that you are not. One of the things that I'm running into most of the time in my verbal battles with young black men in the community that I live in, is they think that they are as wise as I am in their young age. And I correct their asses very quick and tell them, you being one-third of what I live cannot talk to me like you are my equal. You are in no ways my equal. Let me tell you guys something out there. I want to tell you something. It carries the idea that one ought to do whatever it takes to gain this for the rest of their lives. In other words, when I look at this, and he said, the beginning of wisdom is what? What? Acquire it. And then he says, and with all your acquiring, do you understand what you just acquired? See, Richard didn't understand it until he got married. And then he said, John, I haven't been by there to see you. I can't come by to see you. I'm busy. I'm working. I got promoted. He's working for an all-Japanese firm. He's African-American and Asian, and he's working for that firm, and he has been promoted. He's moving up, and I told him, you are a sensible, wise young man. Don't get carried away with folly and everything that he's doing. And man, I'm telling you, that was a Christmas gift for me, victory in that young man's life. Now, moving on down to verses 8 and 9, we see a continuation of wisdom's benefits. Look at this. Prize her, and she will exalt you. Didn't Richard get that promotion? Didn't I just tell you the young man got the promotion? I told him, look, when he got married, he didn't even have the job. That was August. Now, this is January 2020. He has a promotion. He's been promoted. Look at this. Look at this. Prize her and she will exalt you. These are the benefits. She will honor you if you embrace her. You see what I'm talking about? By the way, she demonstrates her uniqueness because wisdom in verse 9 rewards you. She rewards you. She will place your head, she will place on your head a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty. Man, look at this. I don't know why any young man or young woman in America today will not embrace the blessed word of God, the Hagios Biblos, the Holy Bible. Now, if you find words like this in the Quran, embrace that if that makes your life better. If you find something like that in the Buddhist, embrace it. I'm all for you, brother and sister. I'm not going to argue how you get it. I'm saying whatever you do, get some wisdom, brother. Wherein the preceding verses 1 through 9, emphasizes the permanence and the value of wisdom. I want you to, hey, we're going to keep on moving down on this thing because I'm only 42 minutes into this webcast and I'm feeling very, 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 very excited and motivated on the first day of the year 2020 on johnecoleman.org website, 2020 vision. I am giving you exactly what the Word of God says and what it means. And if you latch on to these favorable words, your life will become blossoming into a journey that bespeaks the words that give you the same. Now, wisdom's rewards in verse 9. Look at that. She'll place on your head a garland of grace. In other words, you will be set above others. You will be set at the top and not at the bottom. That's if you follow God. Love your fellow human beings. You know, I watched the Rose Parade this morning, and it had an Hispanic theme because the theme is Latina, because this region was Latina before it was Anglo. And I remember when the Tournament of Roses was all Anglo. I'd look at it maybe one year, the next year. But this year, the whole theme was Latina. It was wonderful. The bands that came in March. And man, it showed Pasadena City College, L.A. Unified School District. Did you see all of those Hispanics marching? Man, this is an Hispanic city, Los Angeles is. Man, I have to go along with it. I got to flow. My neighbors are Hispanic. I love it. I love it. I love the food. I love the culture. And I'm African-American. Why is that? Because wisdom has placed a garland of grace on my head. She will present with me a crown of beauty as I continue to share this love. Maybe I don't have the church coming by my house, but I have this website and a microphone on this computer. And until the day I die, I'm going to bring you a study that's going to blow your mind. Now let's look at this, and you will be able to see what I'm talking about. You will note in verses 10 through 19 speaks of a journey. And let's see if we can see the words that depict the same. Now, I want to start at verse 10. That'll be Proverbs chapter 4. Verse 10 says, "Hear, my son, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many." Now, you know, we went over this a few days ago when we were looking at Proverbs chapter 3. The preacher speaks about years of life. But I like this term, and I like to take you through this again. Listen to me very closely, especially those of you that are over 60 years old. Because as we get older and our bodies break down and we experience more of this pain and everything, I understand Dr. J. Vernon McGee very well now. My mentor, if you want to put it that way, of doing Christian radio, because J. Vernon McGee would come on and do Through the Bible, you know, and his 30-minute programs that he talk you through that. I guess you can say I'm kind of a black, kind of a J. Vernon McGee. I'm going to tell you what I pick up from reading this today. Years of life. We pick up the aspect of traveling now as the teacher asks us to take a close look at our experience, okay? Because your life is an experience. You're traveling through it. And he sees the young person as a traveler on a journey. Well, now, how are you going to? First thing that wisdom does is wisdom adds some years of life to your traveling experience. I don't think I have to say too much about that. Verse 11. Look, I have directed you. This is, man, look at this. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in upright paths. Directed paths. Isn't that wonderful? You note the journey that the teacher has taken us on. The path that he's taken us on is a directed path. It's not a hopscotch path. It's not a catch-as-catch-can. It's not by chance you may make it. It's not you being a dreamer. No, it's knowing what the end result of life is before you even get on the journey. Good. Look at verse 12. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded. And if you run, you will not stumble. Man, look, this is surety. Walk, run, stumble. Do you see the implication of these verses thus far? You're going to be standing on your feet, knowing where you're going. Every time when I wanted to promote up to make more money for my family and things like that, because we all seem to be worried about that, because I followed God's word. Okay, it's not because I went to church and spoke in tongues. It's not because I personally knew the pastor. It's because I fell on my face before God and said, I need you to help me. I'm an African American, great-grandchild of a slave, most definitely. Growing up in this country, I don't know my background, my heritage, but I know that you said somewhere in this book that you would never leave me nor forsake me. So why can't I live like that? Oh, hallelujah. She is your life. Look at verse 13. Take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her, for she is your life. My goodness, we see this journey aspect, right? The teacher's words can be trusted. Even the very smallest activity of your life, if it is led by wisdom, you are on the right path. You know what? I got to share this with you. I got something in the mail. I want to read it to you. Let me step away. And I know I have to come back to verse 14. But I want to share something with you because I got it in the mail. And I never thought that I would get this. It says, update. Here's how to make your final payment. Congratulations. You have received your final payment on my car, they're telling me. You will find the details of the amount owed on the back of this letter. Your account is set up for automatic payments, but we didn't deduct your final payment because the account can vary. And they send me this deal, and they said, here it is, your title or lien release is sent approximately 2 business days from the payment posting of it. My goodness, can you believe this? I own my Mini Coupe. I own my Mini Coupe. Now listen, when I got that Mini Coupe, because there's a story behind that, and I got to share this story with you. I was driving the 2001 Lexus convertible, the first one that Mr. Toyota made, where the top went down in the trunk. Well, I had one of those. It was used, and I bought it with a $10,000 down with some of the life insurance money that I got from the death of my wife. I was getting old. I know I wanted me a nice car. I live in America. I live in Los Angeles. Man, I drove that car to the Monterey Jazz Festival 3 years in a row with the top down. I went with a friend of mine, Brother Al Sullivan, retired policeman. And I remember going about 105, 110 miles an hour. And the top was down and the windows were up. And we were listening to nice music. And I said, what do you feel? He said, man, it feels like, and the car lowered down about an inch closer to the highway. I was driving a super powered motor car. And the only way that they governed the speed limit on that was by air. I looked up and make sure that there was no plane there. I only drove that speed for maybe less than a minute because I'm not a lawbreaker. But I wanted to see what the car could do. That car was marvelous. I loved that car. But I had to take it in and get it serviced because it was a 2001. And here I was driving it in, 5 years ago, okay, when I traded it in. Because I just paid $1,700 to have the front end suspension adjusted and some other things. And when I was driving the car, it drove stiff. It wasn't driving free and clear the way it was because you had newer parts on an older car. And it was a classic, and one of the guys at the Lexus dealership told me, yeah, you got to bring it in for this, bring it in for that, because the car was wearing out. I knew that I could not afford it. I was an adjunct professor and a pastor of a church, and I could not afford this car. So I got angry that day, drove by a Mini Cooper dealership, and asked him, how much will you give me? I had the pink slip on the car. How much will you give me for this car? And they gave me so much money, and I drove my black Mini Coupe off of the parking lot of the Mini Cooper floor, and I traded in my superpowered sports car for a Mini Cooper. I'm just now paying for the Mini Cooper. No, this has to do with wisdom. It has to do with wisdom, and it has to do with the verses that I shared with you about this wisdom. And if you follow along, you will see. You see, because she has guided me. I didn't stumble when I bought that car because I knew that I could not any longer take care of the coverage for a superpowered sports car. So I began to live within my means again and got a regular car. Some people laughed at me. Some people said that I was a fool. Some people said I should have kept it. And I would say, no, I would have been. No, the thrill is gone, baby. I drove that sports car. Now I need to live. I need a car that's going to take me to the college and get me back home. I'm teaching night classes. I need something that I could depend upon, something that didn't burn a lot of gas. I bought a car that had half the engine that I had in it. And I was getting something like 34 miles to the gallon. Still am. And that car is still taking me around, and they just sent me the paper. The vehicle is yours when you pay us $85. You see how good God is? See, man, I'm telling you, she is my life. Wisdom is my life. I took hold to instruction not to let it go. I guarded her, for she was my life. I know what I was doing. I wasn't playing a game. Look at verse 14. The path of the wicked. Do not enter the path of the wicked. You see this? You see this? Do not enter the path of the wicked. And then it says, and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Now, at times some of us allow ourselves, our minds, our flesh, to take us there. But we have to guard against that, because if you follow in that way, you're going to suffer the consequences of someone that is following in that way. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I only have 5 more minutes on this webcast. Have I been talking that long? My goodness, Happy New Year! 2020 vision. But pass by that wickedness. That's verse 15. Yes, avoid it. In other words, avoid foolishness. Avoid stuff that's going to mess with your life. Avoid stuff that's going to pull you down the pit. Avoid it. Pass it by. Turn away from it. And pass on. That's the way you should look at wickedness. Don't get too close to the things that will distract you from your journey. The foolish heart will not avoid those choices. The foolish heart will embrace those kinds of choices. But I want you to note in verse 16 the effects of those that do not take wisdom seriously in their lifestyles. Look what the writer says. He says, for they cannot sleep unless they do evil. You know that's the truth, and I don't have no problem getting sleep at night. I laid my head down. I was up for New Year's. I was up. My friend was by. We hugged each other. Good night. Good night. And he drove all the way back to Pasadena where he lives. And I just got up and went to bed, laid my head down, and went right to sleep. See, because when you're full of foolishness, you cannot sleep because you do evil. And they are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble. You see what I'm talking about? And that's what the wicked person does. In other words, you note the effects of those that do not take seriously wisdom in their lifestyle. They stumble. They're always making mistakes. They're always not meeting it where it should be met. Let's move on down. Look at verse 17. For they eat the bread of wickedness and they drink the wine of violence. This is obvious. The wicked eat what they love. Okay? They become what they eat. See, that's why I couldn't be in that supper club the other day and enjoy it. I said, I don't want to eat with these people. Some of these people are looking at me with racial hatred. You know, what is this jigaboo doing here? All on their faces. That is eating the food of wickedness. And I could say other things. And I told the person, the host that invited me, I thank you and I love you for inviting me here, but this ain't my bag of tea. I would rather eat at home, a veggie sandwich or a veggie burger. I'm doing all right. So, what do we learn in verse 17? Verse 17, when they eat the bread of wickedness, this is what we learn. And this is very, very important. Their choices have led them to dissolution. Their sinful lifestyle have become hypnotic. In other words, they're captured in by the trance of evil. This hyperbole is stated in order to frighten the reader that he or she can reflect on the danger from even the first step on this path. And let's come down to the conclusion, as I got less than a minute. The conclusion is seen in verses 18 and 19, which says, but the path of the righteous is like a light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. Look at verse 19. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. Now, this is good because I like this contrast between light and dark, right and wrong, good and evil, because that's what this whole book is all about. That's what formulates the beautifulness of this book as we take it to our lives. In the conclusion, contrasting the nature of the two ways of life, in verse 18, for sure I desire to travel on that path. Continued obedience leads to increased understanding of the light. And in verse 19, rejecting wisdom produces this in the life of the person who has chosen to take the journey. Now, this is 2020, the first day of the year, and I'd like to do this. I'd like to give you a challenge to find the old paths that I grew up under. I'm talking to the young person that listened to me. Okay, America, do you want to get on with yourself and have a prosperous 2020 and have a vision for a bright future? Well, the only way that you should do that is to follow wisdom. And I'm glad that I could take a few moments out of my day on this New Year's Day to share this with you. And I hope that you've gained some tremendous insight. Now, I don't know where I'm headed next. Yes, I do. I'll start next time right where I'm looking at right now. And it'll be, it's going to be a nice study, and it's going to look at this. Let's see, what is it going to be on? As I follow the wise speaker, we see the continuation of the thought is still with us as we travel through, as we go on through this book and hit verse 20. To ask the young person to give their attention again. And I hope that you can join me as I push through Proverbs in the year 2020. We're going to take our time with this, and I hope that you appreciated this webcast. Happy New Year to you, to all of my friends. God bless you. Stay in that book.